A dear friend of mine, who is also a priest, had a post-it note that she kept stuck on her computer for years, slowly getting more and more tattered until finally it fell off. It was a reminder that she wanted to hold on to early on after she was ordained. The post-it note contained just three words: "Don't explain parables." Don't explain parables. She didn't tell me all of why she hung on to the note for so long, but I can well imagine. It is so tempting when we get parables like the one in today's gospel. I, for one, am desperate to make it make sense, to pull its unruly challenge into something more palatable. Parables resist such tidy treatment, though. Even as people have long tried to come up with clear one-to-one explanations, this character is God, and so these characters must be us, and so we just have to do X and Y and Z. The problem is that this isn't how Jesus used parables, and I don't think it's how he intended for us to work with them. In our godly play classes, the Montessori-esque curriculum that we use in Sunday school, we say that parables are like gifts that were given to us before we were even born. And like gifts, we might imagine them coming in boxes, and sometimes it is really, really difficult to figure out how to open up the box and enter in. That's actually part of the design. Parables are meant to be mysterious and puzzling. They're meant to be head scratchers, inviting or maybe forcing us to look at the world in new ways. In today's parable, Jesus challenges us to take a deeper look at how money works in our world. I actually grew up hearing a lot about money. My mom and my stepdad both taught accounting at Indiana University. And so dinner time conversation sometimes included thoughts on cost-benefit analysis and other ideas that I did not find remotely interesting. It wasn't my mom's favorite subject either, though. She was passionate about education. She loved everything about teaching, and the subject matter in this case was almost incidental. And because of this, she got creative in how she taught accounting. And so imagine with me the scene. There is a lecture hall filled with stadium seating, and those stadium seats are filled with several hundred very sleepy college students. College freshmen. They have just started this course. It's the very beginning of the semester, and they know that they must do quite well in it if they are going to be admitted into the MBA program. And then imagine a smaller and blonder and much bouncier version of me up on the stage. That is my mother. Blank pieces of paper are being passed around the lecture hall, and she invites the students to take out something to write with. There is audible grumbling. How can they already be having a pop quiz? They have not learned anything yet. And then, surprising them, she invites them to draw. Quite out of character for the business school, my mom would ask all of her students right there at the beginning of the semester to draw their relationship with accounting. The results were fascinating and generally hilarious. Students turned in wild sketches, and she would show me the cream of the crop. There were drooling monsters. There were students fast asleep in that same lecture hall, asleep with boredom. There were bullet trains that had left them standing at the station long ago. There were more depictions of fear and anxiety than I can recall. It turned out that they had a lot of feelings about their relationship with accounting. And this helped them to get honest as a learning community about how they were going to approach the semester together. In telling this twisted parable, Jesus is describing the world as he sees it, not prescribing how he longs for it to be. Then, as now, it's a world in which people use means of all kinds to get ahead, to ingratiate themselves to one another, to look out for their own self-interests. It's a world where people feel pressure to scramble and sometimes compromise their principles in search of money. So the manager knows he's going to be sacked, and he makes fast friends with all his debtors on account of this. I've heard the argument that one bit of goodness might be that he's reducing their debt by the amount that would have been his cut, except that he's doing this so that they'll want to help him, essentially keeping them indebted to himself, just in a different way. This is how business works, right? He's still fired, but the master is impressed with his cleverness. But wait, we are not explaining parables here. We're wrestling with them. Which may be why Jesus adds some thorny challenges after telling this odd tale. He keeps talking, and I imagine the disciples keep squirming. What can we be trusted with, large or small? We hear a story depicting how money works in the world, and then Jesus prompts us to consider what or who we serve. We can't have multiple masters, he says. They will always be at odds. We have to choose. As I sat with this parable, resisting the urge to simplify it into something more straightforward, I wondered how I might draw my relationship, not with accounting, but with money. If I'm honest, there are many possibilities. Sometimes money looks like a cliff out ahead of me that needs to be scaled, but the way forward, the way up and over is not obvious. Or the drawing could be a cartoon version of a ball and chain, a heavy weight that holds us back. Or I can see a mime performing. Funny, maybe also a little bit melancholy. The mime tries to work out ideas about money with other people, but is kept quiet by all the taboos we've been taught. Some days, reading the headlines, I want to draw a monster like the ones in my mom's class, ones with great big jaws coming after us, as I see how mammoth businesses can twist individual lives and our whole society. And as I keep wrestling, I also see possibility and hope. I can imagine drawing a springboard, the kind that a gymnast uses, running and then jumping and then vaulting spectacularly into the air. I see a basketball game with the shot clock flashing down, and with it the prompt that if I have received the ball, I am not meant to hold on to it for long. Or the drawing could be a three-legged race with the reminder that we have to learn a shared rhythm, learn to lean on each other and hold each other up if we are going to make it any distance at all. With this uncomfortable parable, I think Jesus is drawing a picture for us too. He's illustrating what money can do to us, how there is this looming risk that it will contort us. He sees how easy it is for money to become an idol, which is a churchy word. It simply means something that is not God, that we put in the place of God. Is money sitting at the top of a pedestal demanding that we revere it? Or is it a ladder that we're continually climbing with the top always moving a little further out of reach? The idea of money as our master is a disturbing image and also a fair representation of how economies often work then and now. And so Jesus, I think, is urging us to live with our eyes wide open. He wants to help us recognize when the world is trying to make us bow down to money so that we can be set free to choose another way. And this, right here, this is the crux of it. The parable isn't something to be explained, but instead it's something to help us see in new ways and then choose to live in new ways. This is how it is, Jesus says, pointing to this troubling parable. And with that, I hear the whisper of the question that follows. How do you want to draw your relationship with money? If we can get honest about what our relationship is now, we can then also get creative in redrawing it. Because money isn't going away anytime soon. I don't think this is a call for all of us to move off the grid, though bartering and mutual aid are lovely. But how? How then will we use it? What new way can we imagine and begin to draw and then, in time, learn to live? How can money be a tool that we use in service of God's love?